honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, Albert Marcus, was aboard the attack transport USS Pierce for all six of the battle stars that ship earned during World War II. He was a radar operator, but didn't spend all his time up there near the navigator and the captain on the bridge. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a video of Mr. Marcus remembering the time a kamikaze came close to hitting his ship in Lingayen Gulf. A similar incident would happen off the coast of Okinawa in April 1945, and when we left off, he was talking about the end of the war about 4 months after that. So after Okinawa, you come back to the States, and then you guys were headed to Japan when Japan surrendered?
Well, we were actually in the Philippines when that happened, our ship was, and whenever they dropped the bomb on Japan, then they were in the process of surrendering. Our ship went into Japan, and when the harbors, not in Tokyo, we anchored there, I don't know why. We anchored there for maybe half a day or so. Then we left from there, went back to Korea. They got this bunch of rifles and gave everybody, it was the arsenal the Japanese had. They'd always, so we got these. Everybody got a rifle aboard ship. I sold it for $20 afterwards.
Do you remember hearing about this atomic bomb?
Yeah, after it happened, yeah.
Yeah, because nobody knew what it was beforehand. Even the guys dropping it didn't know what it was going to do.
It was very bad. I don't think anybody really knew much about it. All I know is, I read about it afterwards, and I got books I read about how it happened, how the atomic bomb was dropped.
But your understanding was, we're going to be part of the invasion force.
Boy, it's good we didn't have to be.
And help us understand if you had, right?
Oh,
because
man.
You're an APA, so you guys would have been very close to shore having boats drop soldiers off.
That would have been very dangerous if we hit Japan. But because they dropped the atomic bomb, it saved us from doing that. Oh, man, the people, Japanese have fought to the last. It would have been a real bad war. But when they came up with the atomic bomb, they really, that saved all the men from getting killed.
Saved American lives and Japanese lives.
That's right. Now, a lot of Japanese got killed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but it saved us. It even saved them. We're lucky we dropped the atomic bomb. A lot of people say it's a bad thing we did, but it shortened the war real fast. They weren't going to surrender unless we did that.
Well, the intelligence estimates at the time were that upwards of 1 million Americans would have died
probably in the invasion. Yeah, it would have been really bad.
And more Japanese than that. They had over 5,000 kamikazes waiting to unleash. So one of those might have had your name on it.
Maybe. No, it was pretty safe.
Well, I think, if I'm counting, I think you've had three times where you said, that could have been it for me if it had been a little different.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound all that safe to me.
Well, maybe not at the time. I never thought because I was just a kid, just like everybody else was.
Yeah. What about now? When you look back on all that now and you say, well, this could have happened, this could have happened, this could have happened, but I'm still here.
That's right.
And I have children and grandchildren.
Yeah, that's right. I'm lucky. I'm thankful to God nothing happened. But like I know, the one Japanese guy that was going to hit our ship, if we never shot at him, I wouldn't be here today. I'm sure. Because, man, he was, I could see his face.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to hit, he'd hit us, and I would no chance of being alive.
That means your kids wouldn't be here either, or your grandkids?
That's right.
Yeah. What about coming home from the war? What was it like to come back to the States again and know it was all over?
Well, I'll tell you what. When they let me and this guy, we come back to San Francisco. They dropped me and this guy off. That's it. They took us off. And I got on Treasure Island, they put me on another LST. And I told the captain, I said, I want to be discharged. So he sent me back, and I got discharged, and then I hitchhiked home. I was home that night.
Did your parents know you were coming?
No, they didn't know.
So how did that unfold?
And they're glad to see me.
I'm sure they're a little surprised.
Yeah. I hitchhiked, got off on Broadway in Fresno. It used to be the main highway there. I walked all the way home from there, and that was it.
Maybe you can help us understand this, because this, you know, World War II is so different from what most of us have experienced in our lives. And, you know, it's consumed the American consciousness for 4 years, and now it's over. And you're not a sailor anymore. You're a civilian. Was that a hard adjustment for you to make?
No, I didn't think nothing of it. I got a job. Well, first of all, I went and finished my high school at Fresno Tech. Mm-hmm. Then from there I went to Fresno State. But it was so crowded. Everybody was trying to go to school there. I decided I went back to San Francisco and went to Cogswell Polytechnic College. Took up electrical. And then from there I come back to Fresno. I got a job at Bureau of Reclamation. Worked for the government for a while. And then from there I went to work for the North American Aviation on an airplane. That was a good job. I was an inspector, inspecting some of the electrical stuff. They closed the plant down. I got another job at another aircraft company there. Then I got in the union, which was really the best thing I ever did, in the electrical union. Then I got some good, decent wages. When you get in the union, you get pretty good pay.
Well, a few years ago, you got to travel with a bunch of other veterans to Washington, D.C., with Central Valley Honor Flight, and see the National World War II Memorial. And you see, you know, the fountain there, and on one side, the pillar for the Pacific, where you served, the pillar for the Atlantic, and in the back, a wall of gold stars, 4,000 stars representing 400,000 Americans who didn't come home. Is there any piece of you that says, I could have been one of those guys that those stars represent?
Yeah, I could have been. I'm thankful to God I'm here today. That's all I can do is thank God that everything worked out good for me. Some people didn't come home, but I made it. We don't want to have any more wars. I'm thankful. Nothing ever happened to me and never even got a scratch. But some people didn't make it. Some people got killed. The guys who went on these LCVPs and hit the beach, oh, man, it was dangerous. Some of them, the Japanese were just waiting for them. They had no chance at all. And, of course, the Japanese got killed, too. I remember they brought this woman aboard from one of the Native. She'd been shot. I remember her laying, they didn't do nothing for her. She was laying there, some woman. One of the islands, I can't feel sorry for her, you know. I think she had a little child with her, too.
Did you ever get a sense of how important your presence there was, or what you were doing for the inhabitants of these islands that Imperial Japan had taken control of?
Philippine Islands were pretty good when we went there. It's a big area, a lot of islands. I remember seeing some of the places that, you know, it's interesting to me because I'd never been there before. The people living in some of them in huts, some of them good place, some of them not as good.
Did seeing some of those conditions change your perspective on what you had in America?
Some of them are. We have it good here. We have a real good country. We have everything. Some of these people don't have nothing. In 1957, I traveled all of the United States by myself in my car. I went and tried to hit every state I could, just driving, seeing it by myself. And I've seen a lot of stuff in the United States. It's really interesting. It's a big country.
Sure is.
And a lot of people don't appreciate it, but if you start traveling, there's so many nice places to see. Oh, man, I enjoyed it, really.
Well, and it's a free country.
Yeah, it is.
And that's what you guys were fighting for.
Well, I'm thankful to God. I know my parents prayed for us all the time.
Did you ever get any mail from home?
Yeah, my mother and dad. I remember my grandmother died while I was aboard ship. They sent me a letter, told me my grandmother died. Everything was okay, really. I can't complain. I've had it pretty good in my life.
When you think back on almost 96 years now, is there something that you'd say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm glad I'm a born-again Christian. That I am really happy about that. If I wasn't born-again Christian, I know I wouldn't go to heaven. But there's nothing like it. And some people don't even, when you tell people, they aren't even interested. They don't even think it's really important, but they don't know. If you're not going to heaven, you're through. I'm not worried about it because of that.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story. Is there anything I didn't ask you about you think we ought to know?
I meet so many people that die at a younger age. Either they're smoking or drinking or doing this and that. But I quit that smoking nearly 70 years ago. I smoked 3 packs of Viceroys a day. I couldn't quit. My mother said, when are you going to quit smoking? I said, I tried, nothing more. So I finally went in the bedroom and I started praying. I pleaded and begged God to help me quit smoking. I haven't quit since. I've quit, been now all these years.
Was that a habit you'd picked up in the Navy?
No, I never smoked in the Navy.
Really?
Never did. I never drank either. It's afterwards I get around these guys, we'd go and have a beer.
Yeah.
This guy would always offer me a cigarette. And I'd take it, and then I got to think, well, what am I taking this cigarette for? I might as well buy them. So I started buying my own. And I got hooked. Oh, man. Cigarettes are really bad for you. They really ruin your life. That's the worst thing I ever did, smoking cigarettes. I give out these deals how to quit smoking. I haven't printed. I don't have them on me now, but I get my people I do see smoking.
So you've helped other people quit.
Well, I try anyway. I don't know if it does. I also have one that says how to lose weight.
I'm just looking at your pocket, and I see a few pens hanging on there. There's a ruler sticking out of your pocket. What's that for?
To mark my Bible.
So when you underline a passage, it's straight?
Yeah, whenever I see something good, I mark it so I don't forget. I try to read my Bible every day.
Did you ever do that in the Navy?
No, I didn't read no Bible in the Navy, but they gave us a little one, you know. They gave everybody a board. I used to pray a little when I was in the Navy. When you're in your bunk, you know, and it's torpedo hit the ship and you're dead, you better start praying. You get scared.
Yeah.
Because there's people die that way, you know.
Yeah.
But we're lucky. Nothing happened to us aboard our ship.
We'll get a final thought from Mr. Marcus in a moment, but I also want you to hear a little bit of perspective from one of his daughters, Teresa Dietrich. At hometownheroesradio.com, I have linked for you a post from Teresa's blog in which she wrote about her dad and his service in World War II. When you were growing up, Teresa, did you know anything about your dad's time in the Navy or what he had done?
You know, really, he didn't talk about it. I think it was like so many other World War II veterans. They really didn't talk to their families much. And so all I remember as a child, as silly as it sounds, is him buying a case of chocolate. I think it was Hershey's chocolate. I'm not sure. For some reason, I always thought that he ate it on the ship. But when I talked to him all these years later, come to find out that's not where it was. But it was in Farragut, Idaho at the base, and he bought it and then it kind of ate it all in one sitting. That's all I knew. I had no idea that there was more to the story than that as a child.
When did that world open up to you? When did you learn more about it?
When I went on the honor flight, my sister, my twin sister and I went on the honor flight with him. I was his chaperone, and so that's when I found out more about what the war was like for him. We would eat breakfast, lunch, and dinners with other men and women just like him, and sitting around the table, they would open up. And so I got to, in a sense, be that fly on the wall and just sit there and listen and watch their faces when they cried because they shared a story that was really hard and painful as they remembered it. Or they laughed and talked. It was the first time I heard about the Seabees. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know about, is it Bikini Bay?
Bikini Atoll, where they did the nuclear test?
Yeah, they talk. Yeah. I mean, just listening to these people talk, it was like, wait, what is this? I don't even know what it is. And that was just kind of cool to listen to them talk. And it was really fun to see that there was just a couple women on that honor flight, to see them and see how they were honored. And, you know, because when you grow up and you're young and your parent doesn't talk about that, unless you think to research it yourself, you're not aware of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, I grew up watching some movies, but it's a whole nother world. So it was the honor flight was great. There was one experience when we had gone to the memorials, and I remember my dad and then the gentleman that my sister was chaperoning, and these two young girls, they had school kids out there at the memorials, and they wanted to hand the two men these little write-ups that they did. It was kind of a thank you that their teacher had them write. So these two little girls, I'm thinking maybe they were in elementary school. I don't know how old, but I did take a picture. They thanked the two men, and then they wanted to take a picture with the two of them. So the two men held the things from the girls, and just so, so sweet, very sweet. And kind that a teacher would care enough to teach her students the way she was teaching them and then have them write those and show up at the memorials and give them to whomever they were called to give them to. So I know there were other students from those classes doing that. I just think that's so awesome that a teacher would want to honor World War II veterans doing that. I also remember seeing Bob Dole out there in his wheelchair. He would come when the honor flight people were there, and that was kind of neat just to see him watching people and shaking hands. He was in his wheelchair. I thought that was really awesome that he would do something like that.
Now that you've heard some of your dad's stories, so this is just in the last few years, you've heard a lot more things. Is there something about what he shared that really kind of gripped you or stood out as, hey, that was a pretty significant moment in his life?
Oh, absolutely. There's one story that he shared that he was talking about at the table of one of the meals when he talked about the Japanese kamikaze pilot trying to hit their ship and missing and hitting the side of the other ship. And when he shared that story for the first time I heard it, I watched his face as he started crying, and he expressed his sadness at the loss of the kamikaze pilot, because he saw the flames in the cockpit, he saw his face, and although he knew what the man was there for, he recognized it was another human being that was dying and that what he was giving his life for. And so I had never seen him express his feelings like that about the war. That was sort of interesting. And I had been listening to these other people share their stories, and I was seeing that other people were doing that and saying that. So when he finally did, I sat there in surprise, honestly.
And when you hear him say about that moment or others that if it didn't go that way, he wouldn't be here. What does that mean to you when you hear your father say something like that?
Well, it means I wouldn't be here. Or my sisters, or my sisters, yeah. That's what I know. So it really makes you think about God's hand in your life and his protection for you. Especially since I knew his mom, my grandmother, to be a praying woman. I know for sure that she was praying for God's protection over his life. I know that for sure. So that means a lot to me to realize that, to think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just a silly kid. I had no idea that he saw some of the stuff he saw until he shared it at the honor flight. I just didn't know.
Is there anything else you want to say about him and what he means to you and your family?
Yeah, my dad, you know, I'm pretty proud of my dad. I also know how much he loves the Lord. He's definitely an evangelist. There's no doubt about that. He does have that gifting in his life. And so when he's gone one day, those are the things that will really mean something to me. And to know that he was a high school kid when he went into the service and he thinks that it wasn't a big deal, I think that was really God helping him to kind of overlook what life was like, and that he just recognized that he was just like one of how many other men or women that were serving, giving their lives. And maybe for him ultimately, because he knows the Lord, as we know, Jesus gave his life, maybe that's the way he sees it, and that's why he expresses it that way, because that's not much of a sacrifice when you know that so many other people have sacrificed more. That makes me proud to think that that mattered to him, that he cared about the United States of America that much. And coming from parents of immigrants, I think that makes a whole lot of sense, knowing his parents came through the genocide, everything they went through to get to the United States. I mean, their story is extraordinary, both of theirs, two separate people coming together in the United States. But he's a man of immigrant parents, and so I don't think it was much for him to do that. This country meant that much to he and his family.
Well, let's let him speak to that. Let's give him the final word here. Mr. Marcus, what is it about America that means so much to you, as your daughter said?
We're free here. We got a free country, but some places they don't have it that good. Supposed to fight for your country, take care of it. All I know is I was just 17 when I went in. I'm older now, 95 now. It's been so long. Time probably going to die pretty soon. We're all going to die. No way out of it.
That's the truth.
I've had it pretty good. My life's been pretty good. I've been pretty thankful. None of us are we all make mistakes. But as I've gotten older, I've learned I've been born again. That's the only thing to do. That's the only way to live.
We hope you live for many more Valentine's Day birthdays, and happy 96th birthday a few days early. That's Albert Marcus, and that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.